So I'm here with Deborah Grace Wenger, and I'm explaining to Deb that I interview people who make their living or their life with an art. So I believe that the art to which you have dedicated or dedicating your life is music.
Well, actually, I'm a theatrical writer. I'm a playwright and write for the theater. And I also happen to be an expert on the American Songbook. And I work mostly in musical theater and on musical projects.
Because I have a question. Can you tell me, do you remember the first time in your life when you were drawn to making up stories or the songs from the American Songbook?
It's a great question, and I remember very well. And although the different facets of what I do seem like a lot of facets, it actually is all dovetails organically together. It's just there's different sides for different moments, like many theater writers have. I was making up stories since I was very little. And I think I wrote my first play when I was about 8. And I come from a musical family. I grew up in Manhattan. And my mom was a concert pianist, but at that time she was a former concert pianist because she had a long career by the time she got married. She had been a child prodigy. And so she was not actively doing that. My dad was a physician in the city here, they were both very, very much, he played the piano too. They were both very, very involved with the arts. Many of their friends were interesting arts people. And I had the benefit of growing up in surrounded by a lot of theatrical, musical, literary people. My family had a place in Westport, Connecticut. So there were a lot of artistic people there too. So that I was lucky to grow up amid that. And I always knew that that's what I wanted to do. I was the, hey kids, let's put on a show kid.
To have written a play at 8 suggests that you had seen a play. Had you seen a play or did you?
That's a really good question. I mean, we watched TV. We did see live theater. We were taken to kids like Gilbert and Sullivan. And there was a theater group called, I want to say, the Paper Bag Players. And I don't know where in my brain that's coming to me. But I remember being very, very little. And they used to do stuff on TV. And they had kids shows at the Westport Country Playhouse, where I grew up going to both kids shows and grown-up shows as a child. And there was something about the theater format that I loved. And I think that if you wanted to describe my my career, it's that I am the, hey kids, let's put on a show, that would sort of, you know, umbrella it, not just as a joke, but that would umbrella it probably most accurately.
So did you take classes? Did you take music lessons? Did you, were you in the drama class at school?
Yeah. Well, I went to a school in New York called the Rudolf Steiner School, which is a Waldorf school. And if anybody knows about Waldorf education, there are many Waldorf schools all over the country and the world. And it was obviously the right place for me and my sister, because, you know, it was a lot of creative and a lot of artistic things. I mean, you were creating, you were making plays about, you know, Roman history when you were 9 years old. I mean, that's how they teach. And that's part of the education. So I was complete. Yes, yes, yes. In answer to all your questions, it was not far fetched for my family. My mom still practiced the piano at that time. My sister and I took multiple instruments. We, you know, in between school, what we learned in class, and then just after school instruments. I played the flute, I played the violin, and I was so bad, the noise really bothered me. So I made my sister take it up because there was this violin then, and I got to switch to flute when I was around 9 or so. And we learned, yeah, multiple instruments and lots of singing, lots of chorus and junior chorus and high school chorus and all the plays and drama club. And we used to do Gilbert and Sullivan operettas at that time as part of the school and other musical things. And, you know, every con, I was part of all of that.
Okay.
From a very early age.
So at some point, and I'm assuming it was fairly early, you thought of yourself as a person who would write for the theater. A lot of kids with this kind of background want to be actors. Did that occur to you?
Sure, because I grew up performing. Performing and singing and, you know, doing all of that. And I was one of, you know, I would more than not get the lead in the play and all of that kind of stuff. But at a certain point, and I remember when I was a senior in high school, I wrote as a special project, I actually wrote a whole play. It was a murder mystery called Murder in Three-Quarter Time. I had seen many too many old classic movies, which I love to go see, not just on TV, but at that time, they had these theaters called revival houses, and you could go see a classic, you know, the classic movies, like up on the Upper West Side and stuff. And so I had seen, you know, many too many Thin Man movies, and so I think I had clearly influenced my style as a 16 or 17 year old writer. And I remember my grandmother saying, because whenever there was a lull, I'd have somebody mix a martini. And I remember my grandmother saying, they drink an awful lot in this play. Anyway, but yeah, so I wrote it, and I wrote the lead part for myself. And I had the glaring revelation on opening night when I was tremendously ill with stage fright, that the stage fright was not from performing. It was from having my play being done and being on the stage and not being able to hide anywhere and being absolutely trapped like a rat that way. And I sort of vowed that I would never again do something like that, where I'd write something very ambitious and put myself in it. So that was my, I remember that lesson. I'm like, as I was, you know, barely, I was just so sick to my stomach and so scared. And I thought, I am never doing this again. So it came out to be partly true. But that's when I realized that I loved being the person creating the world. I liked performing too, but there were also, you know, by the time I got to college, and I went to Swarthmore College outside Philadelphia, and I did a lot of theater there too. It was not much of a theater school, but whatever there was, I'd create my own projects, which I did then, and I still do. And I realized that although I really enjoyed the performing part, and getting up in front of people was never, sometimes it's a lot easier to get up in front of people, even just, you know, to talk to them. And especially if you get to have a microphone, which is just really fun and something to do with your hands, that it's sometimes easier than navigating a lot of things in life, because you can always get a laugh and you can be, you know, I've never been particularly uncomfortable doing that. And I find, you know, there are many ways that I do that, but I really loved being the writer and creating the world. I loved to write. I was writing essays in when I was, you know, junior high school and high school. I had terrific mentors. I had a wonderful mentor named Nick Lyons, who was the father of a friend of a school friend. She and her brothers were in my school, and Nick was an editor at Crown, a very esteemed writer about fishing in that great tradition. And he took me under his wing when I was a kid. And then he came to teach special creative writing classes, and we're still in touch. He's a wonderful man, so some people like that. And I was lucky to have others as I got older. And I just loved being on the creative side of it. And I also thought, you know what? There's so many people who are so good at performing. They're much better singers than me. They're much better actors than me. Let's leave that to them. And I get to be the one that creates those worlds.
Great. Okay, so you mentioned your interest in the Great American Songbook. And if I am correct, you're putting together some event.
I've done a lot in that. I was for 10 years, about a decade, I was the artistic director of the Lyrics and Lyricists American Songbook Series at the 92nd Street Y. And at the time that I came in and took it over from a fantastic gal named Kristen Lancino, who came from Carnegie Hall and revamped that, because it was really going down to the netherworld of unfortunateness. And after Kristen revamped it, I just took it and ran with it and built it up to be pretty pretty snazzy thing in New York, with where everybody wanted to come and work. And I brought in a lot of my Broadway and jazz friends and to do that. So I started writing. You can't make a living as a playwright. It's impossible. I mean, you can. Was it Neil Simon who said you can make a killing, but you can't make a living, something like that. And you know, playwrights very often they'll teach, they'll do other things, even the most successful ones. And I realized when I was starting out that I couldn't make money writing about other things and writing about the things that I loved as well as writing for what I loved. So, and it was kind of accidental. And I began writing about music and theater as a way to, you know, make kind of a sort of a living. And so I wrote several books. I wrote four books about, my first one was about opera, interviews with opera singers, because I had my only honest job I've ever had in my life, employed job was right out of college for 2 years. I worked at Opera News Magazine at the Metropolitan Opera. And that gave me my start. And the editor in chief was a wonderful man who was unfortunately was one of those people who was lost to AIDS. And he encouraged me right from the beginning. I was just this little tadpole right out of school. And he knew that I wanted to write, and he gave me the opportunity to write. And the first article I ever wrote was about our family friend, who was Frances Gershwin Gadufsky, who was the little sister of George and Ira. And she was an old family friend. She was kind of like Aunt Frankie, and they were doing Porgy and Bess at the Met. And I asked Bob Jacobson if I could write an article. And he said, I know you want to write. That was like, 22 or 3 or something. And he printed it. He wrote it. It was a nice little thing. It was the first thing that I think I ever had in a major, it was an international publication. And then I got into it that way, but I was more on the musical. I really came from the musical theater side of it more, although my parents were classical music people mostly. I had grown up going to the opera and the Philharmonic and all the things that they did. We were taken as very little kids. When mom didn't feel like going to see Carmen for the 80th time, one of us would have to put on our Mary Janes or something. And after school, we'd go like, oh God, no, I don't want to go and get dressed up in my itchy smock dress and go to the opera. But my dad was so nice and so made it so much fun. So we were exposed to that early on. And so I had a knowledge of these things, and I realized that I could write about them, get paid for stuff, work on do my theater work at the same time. And out of that came the books. And sort of accidentally, I became an accidental expert on these things. And then what happened was, because of that, and I was writing for the New York Times when I was pretty young. Also in my, I think early mid 20s is when I started contributing to like Arts and Leisure and stuff like that. Was very lucky in that way. And that's when it all kind of came back together, because then I started putting that work into creating theatrical shows for that. So I would be called to write, fix up and write the books for musicals and things like that. And I've had straight plays done off Broadway and then, regionally. But music really became my specialty. And I sort of found this niche, largely due to my work at the Y, of creating these kind of special, unique reviews, theatrical musical reviews that feature the American Songbook, classic standards, pretty much.
Okay, so if I'm correct, you have one coming up.
Yes, we just launched a new series at Jazz at Lincoln Center, and it's a new program called Songbook Sundays. And we did our first show last Sunday, and a Gershwin show. And we are doing our second. It's a bi-monthly series. We're booked till the end of 2022, and Cole Porter is July 17th. So that's what we're working up to. And it's a brand new, like I say, it's a brand new project at Jazz at Lincoln Center. And we're really, really excited about it. It's the premise of it is to take the great American songbook writers, songwriters, and I come in, we come in with some very starry Broadway and concert singers, and you know, sort of cabaret people who specialize in singing classic standards. And then we mix it up with some, and we have starry instrumentalists from the Jazz at Lincoln Center family. And then we mix it up with some very young emerging artists, both instrumentalists and one emerging artist, young singer. And that's a format that Jazz at Lincoln Center and I came up with. But we just launched with Gershwin, which to our gratitude and delight was enormously successful, was met with such great enthusiasm and sold out houses. And Cole Porter is coming up on July 17th. And we're just going to, it's the idea of this project is to take the greatest songs from the greatest songwriters and engage the most terrific performing artists who interpret those from, for, you know, that that people know, the starry ones, and then and serve it up, and then mix in these young artists, and then serve it up on a silver platter in the just the absolute best kind of ingredients, and just go, here it is. Look what this is, and let everybody play, and let these instrumentalists do their thing and do their solos. And just, it's about creating joy, and it's about celebrating what makes these songs great, and just celebrating the pure joy mixed with the greatest artistry from the greatest artists that are here.
Do you want to tell people how to get tickets?
On the Jazz at Lincoln Center website, jalc.org. It's called Anything Goes, Cole Porter and More Cole Porter, July 17th. We're in the middle of casting, but the great, great Broadway and concert and cabaret artist, Christine Andreas, is going to be our diva of the night. And then there will be some, you know, two more singers, one from, again, a successful career singer, and then a very young emerging artist. And we're going to have, again, starry band. And yeah,
that's great. Okay, so I have one last question.
Sure.
It is, having given your life, I think maybe it's more accurate to say that you have given your life to creativity. You just have a lot of places that you put.
Yeah.
You know, you, right? So having given a life to invention, literary, musical, et cetera, is there anything you would say about what that was like, what that life meant to you, what you think about it?
Anyhow. Yeah, I mean, apart from, you know, putting it in the past, but I'm teasing you. I like to think that I have a lot of it still ahead of me. Yes, I think that artists are, I love artists. Most of my friends are artists in some way, shape, or form. And that can mean, you know, you can be a great cook, or you can be, but anything creative. And to me, it makes the world a better place in terms of creating. The ride is the fun part. The process is the fun part. The other project, so this Jazz at Lincoln Center project is my biggest joy right now. My other biggest joy, well, I have a couple of great projects, but the other biggest joy right now is a project I created for and with my terrific Broadway friends over the pandemic, and it's called Flash Force, Middle-Aged Women Superheroes Save Democracy. And it's a radio adventure. It will be, we're making the podcast, we're in the middle of recording it. And I wrote this podcast about a band of middle-aged superheroes who meets in helplessness therapy, women, and they are all theater women. And they are impressed into service through an unfortunate accident in the Columbia Physics Lab next door. They, or is it an accident? They are impressed into service as a band of women who are out there to save the world from all the evil forces of which we know I have given the evil forces some organizing principle. It's kind of like Marvel meets Gloria Steinem meets Rocky and Bullwinkle. And it's funny, it's silly, and it's also a little bit political. But the best part of it is, it really celebrates and explores how these women are finding themselves and their true selves, their authentic selves in middle age. And that's been tremendous joy. I collected everybody's, you know, very lauded, very well-known Broadway actresses and character actresses, a lot of them, and funny, wonderful people. And I've had this tremendously lucky, fun experience. And to me, that in a way answers your question, because that's what the joy of creating this, the joy of writing it, but knowing that I'm writing it for my little family of people. And we all got together over the pandemic every once in a while on Zoom and read this episode and that episode. And it's the community of it. It's the process is the fun part.
I think that is the perfect place to stop. Thank you so much, Dan.
All right. Terrific. Thank you so much, Lynn. It's been delightful. I've enjoyed this so much. Be safe and be well.
You too.